Hey Liverpool fans, have you seen the latest release? At Anfield Index, we've teamed up with Liverpool FC to announce that the brand new 24-25 LFC Nike home kit and anthem jacket are out now, and they're hotter than ever. The brand new kit pays homage to the legendary Rome 1984 side, featuring sleek pinstripe detailing that brings a touch of history to our modern game. Whether you're cheering from the cop or watching from home, you'll feel the spirit of the Reds coursing through every stitch. The best part? You can grab yours today. The new kit and training range are available in official stores, online, and through the LFC store app. Don't wait, order now and be ready to show your Liverpool pride and style. Get your hands on the new 24-25 LFC home kit and anthem jacket today. Let's make this season unforgettable. You'll never walk alone.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Talk about people that you don't know. You jack all the time. You hit so hard you won't pay me no mind. Talk good and think and talk all the time. Talk.
Hello everybody and welcome to the latest edition of Live the Birds. It's been a few weeks since we got together and there's been an awful lot that's been going on in our football world to catch up on. So I welcome along my regular contributors this fine evening, Amy, Kate and Randy. Hello, ladies. How are you doing?
Good. Hello.
Hello. Hello, Randy. I know you're there.
Oh, hello. I'm here. I'm in dark and frosty Oslo. And when I got my sound on, I'm even hurt, I guess.
Well, it's maybe dark and frosty, or it's just dark here in London. And Amy Kate is in the fourth, having sunshine in sunny California. So there we are. We're present and correct. So
it's getting a little cooler here. It's getting cooler. Autumn has arrived.
Oh, what does that mean?
You have to wear a light jacket at night.
It only like 2 degrees now instead of 27.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, my heart bleeds. Right. Moving swiftly on. not to spend all this pod talking about weather envy. So let's start with our most recent game. So we managed to get ourselves past Sheffield United 2-1. A hard-fought victory, I would say. Amy, Kate, did you manage to watch it? I would have thought that the 8 p.m. kickoff in the UK worked quite well for you this time.
So we had a little bit of technical difficulty. I did get to watch it, but I missed bits and pieces because there's it's only on streaming right now, and you have to pay for it. Not as bad as what's going on in the UK, but they put on a new streaming called Peacock because NBC's our channel, and we were trying to get it streaming and as our little group, and we couldn't get it to work through the TV, and so we pretty much managed to try and listen to the first 20-30 minutes and then finally got it going. So I didn't get the best of what I normally get to see. You know, but LFC TV does a great job commentating, so we kind of got the gist of it.
Yeah. Yeah, to be fair to them, I think they do a pretty decent job. A lot of the times, the Liverpool games in the UK will be on the radio, will be on 5 Live. So more often than not, if I'm not looking at pictures. I'm listening to that. But if it's not a radio commentary game, then I do quite like LFC TV. So with all that being said, and your various issues in terms of being able to get, you know, pictures and sound at the same time, what were your sort of overall thoughts at the end of the game?
I mean, we definitely have a lot of good positive things. I'm glad that we won. I think we deserved when we had most of possession. I think we're struggling to score a little bit. Bobby finally scored at home. You know, it was great job on his part. I was bummed that Mo's goal didn't count, but Giada was fantastic. Joe Gomez, to me, finally, he got me out of the match, and he finally, to me, stepped up because I felt like he was constantly making mistakes. It was great to have Allison back. So I think overall, there's a lot of, with all the injuries and everything that's happening, I think we can improve, but it was definitely a hard-fought win. And hey, we got 3 points. It's 3 points.
Yeah, you know, at this point in the season, although we think it's early, that the games are coming literally every 3 days. So
yeah,
I think getting a result is the main thing. But yeah, you know, Randy, there were a couple of points of controversy, you might say, in that game. So let's start with the penalty that we gave away.
I missed that.
Was it a penalty or was it not a foul?
I think it was very interesting because I actually got to see the match, and we can talk about the pay-per-view maybe later on, but that is horrendous in itself. But I got to see the match and we saw that incident, the situation, again and again and again. And I think if that was further up the field, it might not even been a fault. So it might not have been a problem. You know, you might not stop the game for it. But then when VAR comes in, all they concentrate on is whether it's inside or not. So they completely forget to look at, is this actually a fault? So to me, it was okay. I mean, these things happen. It's just funny that it's happening to us again and again. But it could go either way. So it was fine. I mean, it was a pen. And the Norwegian took it lovely, I must say. And so from there, I think, because you could see the match before and after the pen in the first half, we were like upside down. And I think that ruined the game for us for like half an hour. And so we had to take the game back. But what happens then when they get the pen, when they're on top? They put 10 men behind the ball. So our game plan is a bit out the window because we knew they were going to come at us. So I think it changed a lot. It definitely changed a lot until the second half. And I think, as Klopp said after the match, he completely agreed with me for once. He said that we were defense and attack and we were no one in between. And no one in between the lines in attack and no one to pick up the second ball. So, of course, we haven't played 4-2-3-1 in ages, have we? So we needed some time to get that going. And you could see it.
So it's interesting, I think, for me as well, that there was a definite shift in momentum from the point that they were awarded that penalty, because I certainly thought we were the better side up until that point. I know there's been quite a lot of, sort of discussion on social media and in different groups about our inability to properly win the first header, and then, you know, struggling to get to the second ball and a lot of chances, you know, being created through that. And Sheffield United play in a certain way, and you could see, you know, the flick-ons coming through and where, you know, Van Dijk would normally be, you know, he isn't there. And Gomez's strength is not necessarily heading the ball That's not his primary strength. Having said that, you know, it was somewhat of a workmanlike midfield that we had out there, and that was by default almost, because in normal circumstances you'd have Fabinho, you know, sitting there at the base of the midfield. Clearly he was back as a centre back. There was no Thiago, there was no Keita. So the energy and the look of the midfield by default is going to be slightly different. So I don't think that helped. But I suppose the thing that I was really, and Amy Kate, you mentioned it, I was delighted to see Bobby get a goal at Anfield. You know, he had to wait till literally almost the last game of last season,
right?
To score at Anfield. So that's another little monkey off his back. And of course, we saw his mad Bobby Kung Fu celebration.
Yeah.
Jota's goal. Oh, and I do worry one of these days he's going to kick somebody in the head.
Oh my God, I never thought about that.
but you love to see it. You do love to see it. I did think that, particularly in the second half, I thought Jota really, really came in to the game, and he looks like he's been with our squad quite a long time rather than a pretty recent addition. I think he looks like he sort of settled in, really well, and his style suits us. And I'm sure I remember Klopp saying, that he'd been on the radar for 2 or 3 years, but it was, you know, that they hadn't been in the right place to sign him. So he's obviously, you know, fancied Jota as a player for a period of time. I think that it was a little bit worrying, some of the chances that we did give up, in terms of how open we were at certain points.
Mm-hmm.
And better teams will be able to exploit that. So, I guess it's about how do we find those solutions, and we will come on to that. We'll come on to that a little bit later. But as you say, you know, a win is a win is a win. So, you know, 3 points. you know, Fabinho additional bonuses for us.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
I was gonna say I didn't mention. I guess I got all excited about all the good points. I forgot to mention that Fabinho has done a great job stepping in for Virgil. I thought, you know, no one can replace Virgil. Don't get me wrong, but Fabinho has been phenomenal and stepped up to the plate and has done a very good job. You know, I was worried we were going to get caught out and the defense was going to fall apart, or, you know, I didn't know what to expect, but I just, you know, before Virgil got there, we were not stable. And, I think that, we're doing a good job. And, you know, I think as we gel together more, because we're going to have to learn this whole season without him, how to make it work. And I think that's one of the things that Klopp's really good at, is getting the best out of, or his team, not just him, but getting the best out of the players. So I'm hopeful that it's not going to be this whole, you know, horrible situation.
And, you know, well, let's stick with Fabinho then, because the game before we came into Sheffield United was our opening Champions League fixture at the Amsterdam Arena playing Ajax. So, Randy, did you manage to see that game? Fabinho was given man of the match, and it was a clean sheet against, you know, you would argue a kind of, maybe not as strong as they were the previous season when they almost got to the final, but still a football playing side. So what did you make of our performance against Ajax?
First of all, I completely agree with Klopp again, calling it a dirty win. And I think it was, because I mean, everyone knows that Ajax is a football playing team, and we would suit each other, I think. So I was a bit disappointed that it actually didn't look like the Ajax 2 years ago. They were not the same. And I think since we were not the same as Liverpool last season either, it kind of suited us. But it definitely was a dirty win. I was so anxious during that match. I was so worn out at half time. It was like a real battle for all of us, I think. Completely agree. Fabinho was man of the match, and such a relief to see that we can make it. We can make it without Virgil, and it actually looked like it all the way. But I really enjoyed something else in that match, except from it was a dirty, good dirty win. This is the first time I've ever seen Klopp changing three players. And of course, we have five changes now in Europe. And it was so funny because first he called one out and then another one. And we thought, whoa, hey, hang on a minute. And then all three went off. And when you look at who's coming on, I was not anxious at all. Because why not? All these three players coming on was really giving it. I thought they were actually better than the top three in the second half altogether. So, and then you could see Jota's contribution. That was really, really impressive. Mm. And I really enjoy our bench these days, I must say. We have much broader bench these days, and that was a good one. So I enjoyed that a lot.
It's interesting, I think, because we've ended up to an extent with almost a stealth bench.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we've signed sort of players here or there, and we've sort of worried about it for years that, you know, our first 11 was great, but we didn't have enough depth on the bench. So Amy Kate, one of the things that Klopp did talk about is he made the distinction between the fact that you still have five subs in Europe versus the Premier League have gone back to only three in that competition, and that he was going to really try and make use of the five subs. I think he sort of said, you know, he almost feels like he doesn't have a choice because of the number of games. So did you feel that he made good use of the subs? Were there other changes that you would have made? Now, I'm assuming you managed to catch up with the game at some point, because obviously you probably would have been at work at the point it was actually on.
Yeah, I did not get to watch that again or listen to it on LFC TV. It's been my best friend lately. But I was not able to, I was able to watch highlights, unfortunately. And normally I can get the game, but I was not able to watch the full game. I only got to see the highlights, unfortunately. So, but I have a lot of faith in what Klopp's doing and whatever he's doing. It's not like previous managers that you're like, what is happening? And I think with all the games that we have, utilizing that five player is smart, and you got to do it. And I think he does it wisely and rests some of the players because this is a long season, and, you know, we just finished game five in the Premier League. We still have all the Champions League. That was the first Champions League match. So we have the group stage that we have to play out of. And then, you know, there's all the other competitions that can kick in during this. So, with everybody being on injury already so early in the season, I think it's good to rest the legs of the players and the bench, like you said, we have such depth now. You know, I'm seeing Milamino. You know, he's a newer, younger kid, but when he gets in there, I mean, he fits the part. I'm not worried that, you know, when we put him in, is he gonna, you know, is he gonna do anything? You know, is he gonna make a positive impact? And he has so far. All the players that we have right now, and the only one that I'm thinking, just proved me wrong yesterday is Joe Gomez. You know, when I knew that Joe was going to have to step up and start playing, you know, I was like, oh, he makes me nervous, but yesterday he was so great. So, you know, maybe it just needed some time. I mean, he's good enough to play for England. But yeah, I mean, if Klopp,
putting somebody in. So is Harry Maguire, you know, apparently. So I wouldn't take that as a benchmark, to be fair.
No, that's true. Okay. Fair enough. Moving on.
Don't get me wrong. I've got a lot of time for Joe Gomez, and I think he is a very good centre-back, and he's good at a number of things. Like I said, my worry is a bit around the heading of the ball. Mm. And, you know, we had years of almost shutting our eyes when we got set pieces.
Yes.
We just knew we were going to concede. And over the last 5 years since Klopp has been here, that has slowly but surely gone away. I mean, it was probably started before Klopp, to be fair, but even so, you know, you would be able to sit at the game or watch the game and not twitch and not worry about us defending set pieces and corners and all of the rest of it. And you just hope that the spirit of Verge is being channeled by them, because I know, you know, there's opposition fans that have sort of been taking the piss and going on about, oh, you know, that it's almost like somebody died and should we wait for Virgil and all of this sort of stuff. But, you know, he's a once in a generation type of centre back, and any team who had him in would have a massive gap to fill. Having said that, you know, Klopp is a manager who is used to coming up with ways to solve problems, and that's what I'm, you know, that's what I think we're all depending on him to do. But also the players collectively have got to step up, and they've all got to take more responsibility to fill that gap. And I suppose the only other worry is that our now two primary centre backs don't have the best injury records. So between Gomez and Matic, you know, they have had a tendency to get injuries that then take them out for a number of weeks. So that would be my other worry. But coming back to the Ajax game, and Fabinho being man of the match, I thought he was magnificent. You know, cleared one off the line, was making, you know, perfectly timed tackles. And I'm still not convinced the one against Sheffield Wednesday, Sheffield United, was a penalty, but we've moved on. So, perfect timed tackles and, you know, bringing the ball out of defence and looking to spring with those passes, somewhat a la Verge, but, you know, clearly, you know, he's a slightly different type of player. So if he can stay healthy, and we can continue to get him and Gomez and Matic rotating in the right way and getting used to playing with each other in a back two or a back three, or a back four, however, you know, he wants to set it up, then I think what we will find is, as we've noticed over the last 18 months, we're not necessarily the gung-ho merchants anymore. I do think this season we will see less expansive football generally, and more just trying to grind stuff out to try and conserve energy, just because of the sheer number of games and the sort of truncated period that they're all crammed into. It's my view, what it's worth. Just briefly on that, we've obviously got, games coming thick and fast. So a very quick turnaround after the Ajax game. We're back in the Champions League again. I think it's Tuesday.
Yeah.
The Danish side that I struggle to pronounce. So
shall I help you?
Yes, please.
Midtjylland.
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 Okay. Let's go with that then.
It's so funny to listen to all the British people trying to say Midtjylland. It's so many ways of not to say it right, but it doesn't matter. It's a Danish team.
Yes.
I mean, we should be fine. We should take it as a really try things out game, I think. not to put them down because they're good in the Danish league, but I think they should be a good
they're
one.
They're reigning champions, aren't they?
Yeah.
The reigning champions, I don't know if they went through, I'm assuming they went through qualifying. I don't know if they get into the Champions League or league. So they've already, you know, got a bit battle hardened.
Yeah.
But one of the interesting things, and I think I sort of registered it back in the back of my mind sometimes, but the guy that owns them is the guy that owns Brentford. And he's the guy who is the professional gambler who was one of the really early people to bring in data analytics.
Oh,
I didn't know that.
Yes. And same at Brentford. They're doing their, you know, what we're doing, I think they were earlier adopters of, because we took Thomas Gronemarker, I've probably butchered that name as well, our throwing coach, we got him from that club.
Oh.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, I forgot.
So there's a couple of things. So I know Atalanta beat them 4-0, and I get that, and I agree. On paper, I would expect us to beat them, but they score. I was reading an article, they score almost 50% of their goals from set pieces, and they really work on them. And you know, they've got long throws and various other things. So I suppose, Amy Kate, let me start with you. Anything should we be wary of with this team, and maybe where do you think we will be able to sort of deal with their threats?
Well, I think you know, we've got to, knowing that we have their throwing coach, they're gonna know, we're gonna know what they do because we're doing the same thing, so I think we can kind of, you know, not, you know, remember that we need to be a little deeper out, because they can throw a lot farther. We hopefully have, you know, analyzed a few of their games. I'm assuming they've done that. But they're good at scoring and so are we, you know. We just need to make sure that our defense is, able to counter that. And like we talked about, just a few minutes ago about, you know, closing our eyes and thinking, oh God, the center, you know, set piece is happening. We have less to worry about now because I think we're much better at it. So I'm not as, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm nervous because we have a lot of injured players, but I'm not nervous like we were, you know, previous years when we're going, you know, oh God, we're going to lose, you know, we, there's a set piece, you know, so I have a lot more faith in us, and we just need to get through. And if it has to be a dirty win, as Klopp put it, I don't care. We just need to get through, and you know, hopefully the players that are out, minus Verge, because he probably won't be back to maybe, if we're lucky, at the very, very end of the season, if we can get a little cameo out of him. But, you know, I'm just going to be optimistic. I'm always optimistic, so...
So you're envisaging maybe Verge doing Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain in Istanbul on crutches then? Well, maybe not on crutches. Maybe walking under his own steam. But I've assumed he won't be back this season, because if he does come back any earlier, then that's just a bonus for me now.
Mm. Yeah, agreed.
So
we need to move on with that. If he comes back and he's, you know, comes back in 6 months instead of 7 months, or if he comes back at the end of the season, that, like you said, it's a bonus. But in my mind, you know, you don't want to bring somebody back so they can re-injure themselves if they're not quite ready. Klopp would never do that anyway, the medical staff. But we just need to kind of consider, okay, he's done for the season. We need to, you know, focus on how we're going to function with him out of the team right now. And if we're somehow lucky to have him back towards the end and you know, ready to go and play and be the Verge he is, then great. But I'm not going to hold my breath.
No. And on that point, Randy, you know, we need to get over it and we need to move on. We didn't get a chance to talk until now around the fallout, if you like, from the derby. So, this is our chance to put all of that to bed once and for all now. So what particular points or things would you like to get off your chest around the derby? And then we can put it in our box and stick it under the metaphorical bed.
Well, I'm quite done with that match, to be fair, because we've been talking about it for so long and it's been always about the injury. But for me, it's the VAR that doesn't really work. So why the F is it there? And then it's the fact that action of hurting somebody in the way Pickford did was not at all looked at. I just have to move on because I get so angry thinking and talking about it. But I think we learned something in that match as well that I hope we can bring further on, because we were not ourselves, I think, at all in that match. I don't know why and what happened, and maybe we had more respect for the Evertons because they are where they are in the table, and they are a very good team this season. So Ancelotti knows it a lot, played against the, you know, when he had Napoli, and it's always been very difficult to play. And I knew this game was going to be the same, but when it got dirty in the way it did, I just want to forget about it. So put it to bed, say it is what it is, let's move on. And let's try to play our football, because I don't think we did in that match anyway.
And after these next couple of minutes, we won't mention it again. Amy Kate. So I think we probably all share sort of Randy's anger about recklessness of Pickford's tackle. And the damage that was done. Nobody's talked about it. That's unfair. You know, it was an incident-packed Merseyside derby, but you know, there was no real kerfuffle thrown up about Richarlison's red card, which again was an awful tackle. And of course we had the, you know, we had the offside. Was it really offside? I don't know.
Anyway, no, just kidding.
The Henderson goal, chalked off for offside. I come back to, and I'll pose this question to you. Is it VAR or is it actually the application by the officials using VAR?
I think it's a combination of both, really. But the fact that, okay, in my opinion, at this point, offsides has become, like, what is offsides these days? Like, you know, it was very cut and dry, you knew exactly what it was, and now that's, is it the armpit, is it the foot, like where are they coming up with this VAR? I don't get how Henderson's goal was offsides. Like, to me it's just mind-boggling that was even offsides. I would be more upset if it actually made us lose the game, but it's just, it's so frustrating that we ended up with the draw. We should have won that game. But like you said, Everton is playing amazingly, and it's always away at Goodison is a tough match, fans or no fans. And they have a much better coach now. But with with the fact that you've got this how the VAR is being watched or not watched, used, I think is wrong. I think the concept of it could be good, but not the way they're using it and how there's no repercussions for what he did, what Pickford did. That was reckless. And he came out and injured somebody and not even a card, not even, oh, not a problem. That makes me so angry. And I feel like the ref isn't even, like, how can you not see that? So I don't know. It just, this whole thing just makes me angry about how that went, but we just have to, like you said, we just have to move on. And I just don't think that VAR in its current state is worth having. I hate it because it's not, doing what they're claiming we're supposed to have VAR for. You know, they're looking at things, yeah, but it's not being utilized right. It could be a good thing for being utilized right, but it's not. And so I just, yeah.
You're losing the spontaneity element, because, yeah, you know, you go, well, do I celebrate this goal or don't I? Because I've, yeah, got to wait for VAR to tell me that it's a legitimate goal or not, which is, you know,
just celebrate it. I wish they would just celebrate it.
You know what? I was an advocate of VAR because I thought it would be something to aid referees.
Me too. Like,
yeah, exactly.
That was the view that I had, which was they would use it as a tool to be able to, you know, we would talk about clear and obvious errors, but to be able to right wrongs or to be able to give them help with something if they had a bad line of sight or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It appears to have turned into an arse covering exercise. And that's the bit that is incredibly frustrating about it, because they don't appear to want to overrule each other. Other than now they're sending people to the monitor. And if you go to the monitor, the likelihood is you're thinking, oh, well, I fucked it up then. So I better go and have a look and see. And therefore there's an almost inevitability that you assume if somebody's going to the monitor, something's going to happen. I probably have slightly less of an issue with that because last season they wouldn't send anybody to a monitor. But I don't know how they've decided to implement it in such a cack-handed way in England. You'd have to work really hard to do it this badly.
Yeah.
I'm a bit bemused by it all. So I've sort of lost, you know, I've lost a lot of the support for it because of how poorly it's been implemented and used. And if, absolutely, I look around other leagues around Europe who have been using it for longer than us, and they don't appear to have these issues. So I then come back to, well, a proportion of this has got to be the quality of the officiating in the first place. Because VAR can't stop you having a bad referee. Right? The VAR can look at stuff and you can potentially send that referee to the monitor, but that doesn't stop that referee making bad decisions.
Wasn't it an intention that you should share responsibility between more refs? So hopefully take away one bad ref, you know, share the responsibility. But these guys in that truck, wherever, in the Everton match.
Stockley Park, wherever they were, yeah.
Yeah, and they didn't say, oh, this is something you should have a look at. All they were doing. So I think that the result now is that the ref at the pitch leans on the VAR guys. The VAR guys forget what they're there for. So they were preoccupied with a line, not with, is this an actual, you know, isn't this a fault anyway? And if you remember before VAR.
They're very narrow in what they're looking at.
Yeah, so they're not actually doing their job. I mean, there's lots of people sitting there. One of them could look at this line all the time. I don't mind. And the other guy could look at, is this a fault? You know?
But you do a question, what are the assistant referees there for? Like, there was the assistant referee who was flagging that apparently Van Dijk was offside, also must have seen the assault by Pickford.
Exactly.
So, and there's some sort of spuriousy argument, sort of says, well, you know, the ball, the play was dead, so therefore, you know, you couldn't give a foul. Well, that's bollocks as well.
Absolutely.
You know, Man United got given a penalty after they'd blown the final whistle. Right?
Yeah.
Managers have been sent off at half time in the tunnel where the game is in theory dead. So that's an absolute bullshit of an excuse. And we are honestly going to put this to bed. And the way we're going to put this to bed, right, is because it's done and dusted. You know, we got out of there. We lost, you know, we lost Thiago. We lost Van Dijk, both to injury at the end of that. It was a brutal game.
Yeah.
However, we got out of there with a point. And the good news is that Everton lost today. And lost their own. So that's home. We're going to put around the box and slide it on the bed with two Danny Ings assists for good measure.
Oh, that's lovely. I love that guy.
I would like to come back.
Yeah. So we're done. We're done with the derby. Not coming back now.
Good.
And so, they have to come to us now, so it's a whole other. We play much better at home.
I don't even know what it is. I'm presuming it's some time next year, but I don't know. I'm not looking that far ahead. I'm game by game at the moment.
Exactly.
So like I said, the last few weeks have been interesting for a variety of reasons. And Liverpool have been in the news for a few things, one of which was being co-authors of Project Big Picture, which put the cat amongst the pigeons somewhat alongside Man United. Alongside Man United and, you know, Rick Parry as the EFL chairman and I don't know who else might have been in the background tinkering with this. Now there's a lot to the proposals. Part of it was driven by the government in the UK demanding that the Premier League do something in terms of bailing out clubs further down the pyramid. Part of it, when I sort of read through the detail, I thought there's possibly some merit in some elements of it. The bits that I'd be interested in your opinion. I won't give my opinion yet. I'd be interested in terms of how much you kind of took into it, the bits that you thought might work and any bits that you were concerned about. Let me start with you on that, Amy Kate.
At first I thought, oh, wow, Liverpool, like being all optimistic, Liverpool's the forefront. Great job. You know, what is this all about? They want to help, you know, the leagues are taking initiative. And then I kind of dug into it a little bit more and had a discussion with, a really good friend of mine, who's an Arsenal fan and, also had, a conversation with, former player Nick Tanner about it. And my opinion kind of changed a lot because I, you know, started looking into it more and seeing it. And I don't think it's a overall good thing. First of all, you know, the big six being the big six, I can see why other teams are going to reject that idea. Why should six teams have the control? And I also don't think that this needs to be implemented now. The teams need help. They need money now. This is supposed to go in, I think, what is it, 22, 23 or 20, something like that. It's down the road. So these teams need the money now. And so I don't like that idea. I think it will kill women's football. That just is not sitting well with me. You guys all know how I feel about women's football.
And one of the things that I was talking to Nick about, actually, even this morning, his idea of wine, instead of looking at, you know, all these foreign players because they're cheaper, why aren't we looking at players in the lower leagues that have potential? You know, that's where, you know, Robertson came from, Hull City. He wasn't in a prem. I don't believe Hull was in Premier at that point. They've, you know, kind of teetered in and out over the years, but we've got so much great talent in our lower leagues that we could get, you know, at a better price and keep the money within the lower leagues. And I think that would be a really positive thing. Not to say that we're not going to get other, you know, that you don't get stuff from outside, you know, England, but there's a lot of resources that we could trickle the money. And I apologize, I can't remember what team it was, but they signed a lower league player into another team. But what they did was, the agreement was to pay them over a 5-year period. And this lower team knows that they're going to be okay because they've got this money steadily coming in for the next 5 years. And having, you know, not getting all lump sum all the time, you know, because then you spend it and it's gone. And then what are we going to do next year? So I think having a mindset financially different would be helpful. But there's so many negative things to this that I don't like it. I think that there's so much we need to do, but this is not, I'm glad it got rejected. And I just don't feel overall, I think there's a lot of, as you could say, poison pills in the thing, you know, in the concept of this whole plan. There's a lot of, you know, hidden agendas, and I don't like that.
Or not so hidden, you might say.
Well, true, but the lower teams, I could be wrong here, but I think some of the lower teams would be like, we just need the money, and that could be exploited. Oh yeah, you know, we'll give you all this, but you just have to give this. You know, can you imagine? And I don't know how they got to this, the big six. I don't know if it's the big most money or whatever, but there's teams that have been there longer.
Yeah, it was basically a sort of big nine, I think is the concept, and it's based on longevity in the Premier League. Now, what I don't know is whether that nine could ever change. So, if because at the moment I think West Ham would be one of the nine based on the time they've been in the Premier League. But let's assume they got relegated. Does that mean that, and I don't know who it is, let's assume it's Leicester. I don't know.
Yeah.
Would Leicester then become one of the nine, or do the nine become eight? Or does West Ham retain their voting even if they're not in the league? I you know, there's things like that. I don't know, and I don't know how much detail that they went into on that sort of stuff.
That's a good point. And the other thing is, you know, there's teams. So there's only been six teams in the new form. Well, not new, but the current form.
Since football was invented in 1992. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. You know, you've got teams that.
So it's Liverpool, Arsenal, Everton, Manchester United,
Tottenham,
Chelsea, and
Tottenham was in there.
Yeah, Tottenham. And then Man City are there by dint of, you know, their financial clout. And I think, like I said, I think West Ham is another, and I can't remember who the other one is.
Should be in there, even though they got relegated a couple of years ago and came back
Liverpool,
up. But their history has been there longer than
Southampton. Southampton.
Southampton.
What they're calling long-term shareholders, which would be Liverpool, Man City, Man United, Chelsea, Spurs, Arsenal, Everton, Southampton and West Ham, would be afforded voting rights, enabling any six of them to pass and veto certain rules. That was part of the proposal. So, Randy, there were a couple of other things, and feel free if you want to talk about that bit. But there were a couple of other things, one of which was the reduction of the Premier League from 20 to 18 teams. One of the other proposals was that the EFL teams would get 25% of any future broadcasting deals, albeit that, like I said, there's probably a sting in the tail of that as well. But were there particular things that sort of jumped out at you that you thought were worth further exploring, or you just thought this whole thing is madness?
Well, I thought this is madness first, and I actually quite still think it, I think, because I'm really baffled about the 6 and 9 having votes that the others haven't. So what happened to democracy? Well, you can see all around the world is going down the drain anyway, but I don't particularly like this idea about somebody being masters or, you know, champions of the league, so to say, without even having played. So look at the table now, for instance. I mean, who are the biggest teams? Man United is at the 15th place or something. Funny. I haven't really gotten into this.
You love to see it.
You love to
see it. And Man City are 13th, I believe.
Can we
just say that one more time?
Manchester.
Man United, 15th. Man City, 13th.
Yay.
Fantastic.
No, I just don't understand this. And also, because after this talk about this deal, whatever it was called, they were talking about it's also been for years a talk about the European Super League, hasn't it? And this is, again, it's another way of inventing football, or continuously improving football, which I think we should. I think we should say we've been doing this for like 200 years now. What do we want to make better? But I don't think these suggestions comes into making the game better. Because if you look at the European Super League, they would probably play their games in Dubai and China and stuff like that, because that's all about bringing football to where the money is, I think. Champions League works perfectly well for me, and it looks like it works for the players and everyone else, and they travel around Europe. Again, it is traveling, but it's to where they belong and where their fans are. So what we're doing now is, first of all, we haven't got any fans in the stadium in England. And second of all, we're looking into, so how can we exploit the fans that don't get football? And then we look into how can we make the powerful more powerful? I mean, I don't think we need all this. I really think we need to help the EFL and we need to help the women's football. But this is not the way of doing it. You know, empowering others more is not the way of helping others out, to me, at least.
Yeah. No, I completely understand what you're saying. I think for me, you'd be unsurprised to know the thought of concentrating more power in fewer hands did not sit well with me. Now, I'm not naive enough to think that, you know, spending time coming up with a proposal in terms of looking at restructuring football, that, you know, Liverpool and Man United are not going to try and look after their own interests in terms of the proposal. And I wonder if it's somewhat of a, when I say a Trojan horse, I don't necessarily mean it. But the fact is, people know that there are some fundamental issues that need to be resolved. And the one thing I suppose I've got a limited level of sympathy with is, right, there is nothing coming out from the Premier League. There is nothing coming out from the FA. There's nothing coming out from the English Football League. And there's nothing coming out from the government in terms of the structure of football for the future, or proposals or plans. I don't think it should be coming from the clubs. I think the clubs should have input into it, but I also think fan forums should have input into I think, you know, clubs down the lower league should have it. I think the governing body should have it. Women's football should have a say into it. And the broadcasters, because as much as we don't like it, you know, they are one of the major sources. So we need to come up with something that works across a number of different levels. And ultimately, what you're going to come up with isn't going to make everybody happy. So I do wonder if this was just trying to blow the bloody doors off and actually get people to start having a conversation about this stuff. Because for me, one of the things that I think should absolutely be done is that the Premier League should go down to 18 teams. Yeah. That was originally always how it was planned. And they bottled out of it, and you're not going to get turkeys voting for Christmas. But actually, it would bring us in line with all of the major leagues in Europe. It would remove, you know, that number of fixtures. It probably enables more properly sanctioned winter breaks. Mm. And I just think it's got some player welfare at the centre of it. Your point around the European Super League, I actually think that potentially dies a death, because it becomes, if you literally have, you know, Liverpool, Man United, Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Inter Milan, you know, AC Milan, you know, PSG, and, you know, Marseille or Lyon or whoever it is, you know, and a couple of others, and they spend all of their time playing each other, and there's no, you know, there's no promotion, there's no relegation or anything, because, you know, you're all in a European Super League. I can't see that has any long-term viability. People get really bored really quickly. The bit that we need to think about is that the current format of the Champions League, I think, finishes in 23-24. And so, again, I'm sort of on the page of some of this stuff. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. But they are going to tinker with the Champions League, which sadly will be driven by money and trying to get more people in and one thing and another. But that is the premier club competition across the world. Mm. And the danger is that Gianni Infantino, who's the president of FIFA, doesn't like that and wants to find a way to make his World Club Cup the World Club Champions League. And that's worrying for me. So I don't know, you know, what happens with that, but the conversation has to start. I don't think our clubs, so I don't think Liverpool and Man United have necessarily done themselves any favours coming out as the co-authors of this.
No.
But there are some, you know, there are some ideas that have got merit in there for further exploration, in my view.
I have a thought, being the American here. And this is not putting America in a good light. I'm not a fan of American football at all. That's 4 hours of my life I'll never get back. And I just think that the owners have way too much control, and you move teams around, and it's all about the money and money and money and money. But that's the American business model. You've got, and I'm a big fan of FSG. They've done a really good job. They've made mistakes, don't get me wrong, you know, the ticket thing, the you know, trying to, what's the word? Trademark the word Liverpool, all these stupid little things that they've done. But they got shot down, and the fans, you know, did their thing, and they, okay, we hear you. You know, they're not perfect, but I'm a big fan of you know, they get the club, because Red Sox is also an old club that the fans are very dedicated to and are important to. So with that being said, I'm not trying to bash them. I am a big fan of them, but it is American business. And United's owned by, I might say this wrong, is it Glazers or Glazers? Something like that. Another American club, another American owner. And I'm wondering if possibly the idea is to turn English football into more of a American business model. And that I don't think is going to settle well. And I think that's what maybe is driving those two. But that could be, I could be wrong, because Arsenal's also majority owner American, and they turned it down. And that was pointed out to me by my Arsenal friend when we had this whole conversation, because we talk about this kind of stuff. So maybe my theory's wrong here, but there's a point that, you know, I think they're trying to change the business model and, you know, do it more.
And you might be right. You know, you might be right.
I don't know.
You know, the thing about the American sports model. So whether you talk about the NFL, whether you talk about the NBA, whether you talk about the NHL, whether you talk about Major League Baseball, there is no promotion or relegation, right? There's no jeopardy in that.
No.
It's broadly a closed shop unless they decide to create a new franchise.
Hmm.
And, you know, you can move teams to an extent at the drop of a hat, you know, or another city can come in and I'd sort of take the latest example in the NFL. And I am a fan of the NFL. I do like it, but I don't like the idea of just upping sticks and moving a team when you've got a loyal fan base. And the latest, you know, iteration of that is the Raiders. So, you know, the Oakland Raiders, the LA Raiders, the Oakland Raiders, now the Las Vegas Raiders. So I don't agree with that. You know, as a televisual spectacle, I think the NFL is great. And I've gone to a number of games, but in terms of football, that part of the attraction is that there is something right. You know, it's not just about getting to the playoffs or getting to the World Series or whatever it is. It's actually, there's a jeopardy. Your existence is on the line as being able to play at that level, you know, that division, that level of football. And that makes it interesting. I mean, you know, there's been conversations, aren't there, Brandy, at various points around, could you introduce a salary cap and all of this stuff around it would be restraint of trade and we'd all be taken to the European Court of Human Rights and various other things, because that's another thing that's in US sport that is not, it's in English sport in rugby, but it's not in football, in the Premier League. But they have looked at introducing salary caps, I think, in League One and League Two. I'm not sure about the Championship. So there are elements that you think, well, there is maybe some sense in that, particularly about stopping people spending beyond their means.
Yeah.
But if you put a salary cap in, you know, it'd be interesting to see how, you know, our team, for example, and Man City would do, and I think Man City and maybe Man United more because they've got that loaded debt on there, against somebody like, I don't know, Southampton or Burnley, for example, where actually you're competing on more of a level playing field, because you can't go out and spend 65 million on a player, because and I'm making this up, everybody's got a 50 million salary cap every year, right, or whatever it might be. So, you know, that this is probably, you know, la la land and all of the rest of it. But I do think it's something that might be worth considering. But Randy, I don't know if you saw, there's been some articles around Brexit and what the impact of that on players, because clearly on the 1st of January they lose freedom of movement across the other 27 European, which clearly impacts football players. So if you were in a non-EU country, you would have to apply for a work permit, and it depend on the number of like international caps and appearance you made for your national federation, and to an extent sort of how high up the pyramid they were, whereas that's likely to be the rule that's applied for everybody going forward. So this is assuming, you know, no deal, whatever, anyway, lots of freedoms moved. So, and I guess, Randy, I'm sort of, I'm juxtaposing this against Amy's earlier point when she said she was talking to Nick around, you know, is there talent in the lower leagues? But again, part of the attraction of the product of the Premier League, not only is it competitive, but you see the best players from around the world. So how do you marry those two bits together?
Now, that's very interesting. I haven't read a lot of articles on Brexit impact on PL, I must admit, but my own thoughts on this is I think England, Britain should use their homegrowns more anyway. So maybe that's not a bad thing, because there is a lot of talent. And we've seen that lately, the last 2 or 3 years, the young English talent goes abroad because they're not let to play in England. So maybe they should just stay then, and if that becomes more attractive to them, because it's no way they're going to come out anyway. But of course, you lose some of that. All the best players are drawn towards Premier League, and it's going to be an impact. And in one way, I don't think it's a bad thing. Trouble is then all the talent from South America, you know, are going to go to, I mean, most of them go to Portugal anyway, from Brazil first, and then they stop there, or they go to Shakhtar Donetsk or wherever, and then they are distributed all over to the bigger leagues. But I think we're probably going to see a different Champions League going forward then, more British people in England and more world in Europe. But so in one way, it's not a bad thing. In another way, it's going to change the game. So Brexit is a whole other thing. We could have a couple of podcasts on that, I guess.
We need to do that with alcohol.
Good luck with it. I'll just say, good luck with it.
I can't do that on a podcast.
No, we have to get drunk.
Yes. right. So I do think that you know, that I suppose the point I'm making is that it may make some quite fundamental changes that people didn't even ever consider as part of Brexit. Probably never occurred to them. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And maybe it'll be less of an impact, because if it's a good enough player and you apply for work permit and you get turned down, you can appeal and probably win the appeal. But I do think it's going to change the landscape somehow. So we've got a good chit chat here. So last couple of things before we wrap this up. So our next games, we talked briefly about Randy, if you do the pronunciation, please. Our next Champions League game against
Midtjylland.
Thank you. And then we have the High Flying Hammers coming to Anfield. And then we go to Atalanta for our next Champions League game. So an interesting little triumvirate of games. And I know over the last couple of seasons, we've been saying, oh, you know, how many points do you think we'll get out of these three games? And every time we've gone 9, 9, 12, 15, what have you. You know, we've had a few little setbacks over the last few weeks. So those next three games, two Champions League and the game against West Ham. Randy, let's start with you. How many points will we have at the end of that?
Let's count 3 Midtjylland, 1 West Ham, and 1 Atalanta. So that is 5.
You're going for 5. So, Amy Kate, against those three teams, how many points do you think we'll come up with at the end of it?
So, I'm a little surprised. Would love to know why Randy thinks we're only going to get a point in our Premier League game, because I was going to give us 3 for that for sure.
Good.
And you know, the ever optimist here. and I think that we're going to get 3 points from the team I can't pronounce.
And it's all right, right?
Yeah.
Mikula.
Yes, that would be the one. And I was gonna go same as Randy as a draw. So I was gonna give a 7.
Okay. That's I think that is positive. I think you know what? I'm gonna go. I'm sort of jumping here and there, because I'm a terrible teacher, right? So I worry that if I go really positive, it means everything will go to shit. So I'm not going to do a prediction. You two have given me your views. I am, you know, I am optimistic as well. I think the game against Atalanta will be high scoring, and I hope we will be on the positive end of the high scoring. West Ham have had a good run, but they can be got at. So I would hope we would get something decent out of that game. Yes, I do expect us, even with their set piece prowess, I do expect us to get a result against Michelin, but I'm not giving a points estimation at all. So thank you for that. Right, any other business? Anything you want to plug, highlight, or talk about very quickly before we wrap this up? Amy Kate.
No, I don't really have anything to plug. I just really, I mean, I'm glad football's back. We're getting kind of in our groove. I would like to plug the support of the food banks instead of supporting Sky paying $14.95, even though it has no effect me personally. I think it's horrible that they're doing this. And so support charities instead of, you know, the rich guy.
Thank you. Yeah. I was going to be, so I'll wrap that round. Randy, what about you?
I would like to say I completely agree with you. The pay-per-view is really stupid. And then I'd love to see Elliot doing very good in his new team. I mean, 2 games and he's got 2 assists and a goal. So that's really nice to see. And it was lovely to see Brewster on the pitch against us in an actual, you know, strip. He's in a team. I love to see it. And I'm really, really happy he didn't score against us.
Me too.
And I look forward to seeing Rhys Williams and Billy the Kid being thrown into the defence, hopefully later than sooner, but it's going to happen, knowing Klopp is around.
Yes.
Well, the good news in inverted commas is obviously we're out of the League Cup, so we don't have to worry about another competition until the FA Cup third round starts in January.
Yeah, good.
Well, that's good.
That's a bonus. So from me, just the last little thing, just to build on Amy Kate, I did my bit in terms of making a donation rather than pay-per-view last night for the Liverpool-Sheffield United game. It's obviously a personal choice, but I do think it's not unreasonable to expect fans to pay that on a per game basis, particularly with the way that people are struggling at the moment. Yeah. The brilliant news is, so the I donated to the one in Liverpool, or serving the sort of Liverpool area, and they had a target, I think, of £10,000, and that got smashed by 10. So the last it was about £103,000 had been raised by people donating rather than opting for pay-per-view. So I think it is, and look, I need to declare that, you know, I am an employee of BT, so I want BT Sport to be successful, but I understand that they don't really make anything out of this in terms of the production. So I understand that their business model isn't necessarily stacking up, but I just think they've not read the room. And if you're going to do it, I think people would probably pay if it was a fiver or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you know, $9.99 even. I mean, fundamentally, particularly if you somewhere where you've already bought a season ticket and you haven't got a refund, I think it's outrageous to expect people to pay for it on a game by game basis. Well, so I don't agree with it, but if you're going to do it, then I think you have to think about the affordability of who you're pitching it to.
Yeah.
So I have a question on that because obviously it's a little different in every country. But you guys have to pay a TV license, which we don't. But we have cable, and if we want cable, we have to pay the cable fees. Yeah. You guys have you have to pay a whatever that is for Sky Sports. So if the game is on Sky Sports and you're paying the bill to have Sky Sports, just using that as an example, why you're already paying Sky Sports? Why are you paying an additional?
Very good question, Andy Kay, which is why there's such a reaction to it.
Right.
Because I don't have Sky Sports. I've always refused to have Sky Sports because it's a Murdoch-owned operation. Mm-hmm. But if you take the full package of Sky Sports, it's about £120 a month. Add on to that your license fee, which is, I think, £120 a year. If you take BT Sport, that's a separate subscription. Amazon, obviously, in the UK, mm-hmm. has started taking up some of the sporting bundles. So potentially you have to pay for Amazon Prime as well if mm-hmm. you want to see your team play on that streaming service. And so it goes on. So you could conceivably be paying, you know, upwards of, you know, £200 a month.
That's ridiculous.
To try and watch your team play on the various broadcast fields.
Yeah, and that's just, I get that each broadcast wants, you know, they're spreading the love, if you like, on where it's being watched. Get that. But that what they're thinking about is, you know, or at least the way I'm viewing it, is the broadcast companies, you know, Sky, BT, Amazon, you know, NBC, whatever they are thinking about themselves. They're not thinking about the whole picture and the consumer, because they're thinking, well, you're only, at least in America, so we've changed it, that, like I had mentioned earlier, to Peacock, because NBC is a Peacock, so that's their new streaming. Now, my understanding is it's, I think, $5.99 or $4.99 a month to have this. And, you know, that's not, people don't want, they're tired of having all these streaming things, but you're thinking, okay, an extra $5 a month, you know, an extra $60 a year, opposed to, you know, you want to watch one game and it's £15. So you're looking at, like, say,
$18. $15
a game. Roughly.
Which, if you had a ticket in your hand and you were walking into the ground, and you were, you know, seeing your friends and having that sort of experience, that would be something different. But the fact is that you're stuck at home. You can't really go anywhere. And they're trying to take advantage of a captive audience and sort of prey on your, you know, your love or your obsession for your team. And I it's just a step too far for me.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, right. So no take the view for us then.
No.
all right, ladies, it has been brilliant having the chat with you. I know we've you know, we try and make these about an hour. I think we've gone a little bit longer than we would normally, but it has been great fun discussing all subjects. So thank you very much for joining me this dark / sunny / frosty Sunday, wherever we may be. And I look forward to talking to you again soon. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and take care out there.
Life goes on day after day. Hearts torn in every way. So ferry across the Mersey, 'cause this land's the place I love, and here I'll stay.
Sports Social Podcast Network.